pleasure to welcome Supin Lim to Austin. She managed to escape the snows of Chicago just in time to be with us here today, so we're grateful for that. She got her, actually, BS degree. Your background is in both physics and mathematics, right? In the earliest beginnings. And then did her PhD at NYU with John Rinzel, and got her PhD in mathematics. And I also noted that she won the Sandra Bleistein Prize for Notable Achievement in Applied Mathematics at the Courant Institute in 2009. And then she went to UC Davis, where she did her postdoctoral work with Mark Goldman. And then since 2012, sorry, she's now at the University of Chicago with Nicholas Brunel, and she work that mixes a lot of dynamical systems and stochastic work that investigates stochastic processes, as well as a lot of other mathematical techniques, and now applying it to problems in learning and memory. So let her tell you about the her work. So welcome.
Okay, thanks. So it's my great pleasure to be here today, and thanks for inviting me to a relatively warm Austin. So I will talk about the models of the cortical circuit for learning and memory. So ability to acquire new information and maintain this learned information is one of the most important functions of our brain. And memory to maintain this information spans a broad range of the time scale. So for instance, some of you may notice what and where this sculpture in the photo is, and some of you may have a judicious guess from where I come from now. So this is a cloud gate in Chicago, which is called as a bean because of its shape. And for those of you who remember, this is probably from your memory of your visit to Chicago a few months ago or a few years ago. On the other hand, many of our cognitive function is based on the memory on short time scale. So for instance, if the photo disappears on the screen, and in the next screen, if I ask which photo you just saw, then most of you people will choose the left one, although the current state is more like the right one. So such a memory on short time scale is important because it keeps the information accessible for the targeted goal, such as decision making or planning. So memory can be broadly classified into the two categories depending on its duration. One is a short-term memory or working memory that lasts on the time scale of few tenths of a second. And second is a long-term memory that can last a lifetime. So activity correlated with each type of memory has been observed in a wide range of the brain area. For instance, prefrontal cortex and a parietal cortex were the short-term memory, and hippocampus and cortical association area for the long-term memory. So they, in particular, motivated by the experimental work for the short-term memory in the prefrontal cortex and a long-term memory in the inferior temporal cortex, I will discuss a model for the cortical circuit for each type of memory. Before I get into the more details of these models, I'd like to briefly summarize the few important features of the brain. And this is an overly simplified picture of the description of the brain, but this is a minimal element which is required for the discussion for the model. So, and also I may use the terminology which may not be familiar with you. So if you have a question, feel free to ask the question. So the brain can be thought as a network of neurons which is connected through the synapses. And each neuron is an electrically excitable cell which maintains the voltage gradient across their membrane. And when this voltage gradient difference is large enough, then it generates the characteristic electrical pulse which is called as action potential or spike. So the activity of neuron can be described by these spike trains, or the frequency of the spike train, which is called as a firing rate. And when this action potential arises, then it activates the synaptic connection, which is the site that transmits the signal to the other neuron. And also note that the signal generated from a neuron can be either positive or negative only. So the neuron generates the positive signal is called as an excitatory neuron. And neuron generates the negative signal is called as an inhibitory neuron. And also, the signal transferred to the postsynaptic neuron can be filtered with a different time constant ranging from a few milliseconds to the 100 milliseconds. And finally, the synaptic connection between a neuron is not a fixed quantity. It can gradually change over time. So with this minimal description, I will discuss the model for the short-term memory first. So for the short-term memory, the persistent neural activity that lasts long after the offset of the transient input has been suggested as a neural correlate. So for instance, in a special working memory task, Q appears on the screen in the A location and disappears. And during the delay period, which lasts, in this case, 3 seconds, the monkey should memorize the location of the Q. And neurons in the prefrontal cortex have been shown to maintain the persistent activity during the delay period, which reflects the cue location. So this is the time course of the example memory cell for the different cue location, where x-axis is a time and the y-axis is a firing rate. Then this neuron shows the persistent activity, especially with the preferred cue location at the 270 degree. So such a persistent activity that reflects the special Q location can be a substrate for the special working memory. And in another task, it was shown that the level of the persistent activity increased the stimulus strength during the delay period. So in this task, monkey received a vibrotactile stimulus on his fingertip and should memorize the stimulus frequency over the delay period. And it was shown that also the neurons in the prefrontal cortex maintain this persistent activity that reflects the strength of the stimulus. So here is the time course of the neuron, the time course of the neuron for the different stimulus frequency. So it was shown that this firing rate during the delay period varies monotonically with the stimulus frequency during the sample period. So such a type of working memory with a monotonic encoding scheme was called as a parametric working memory. However, how such a persistent activity is maintained is a mystery because this delay, the observed decay, or the duration of the persistent activity is much slower than the typical intrinsic or synaptic time constant of the neuron. So the evoked activity by a transient input in an isolated single neuron tends to decay on a timescale of 10 to 100 milliseconds, which is way shorter than the duration of the memory task. So to prolong the memory duration, the network interaction has been proposed. So I will talk about the general principle of the network interaction underlying both types of memory, parametric working memory and a special working memory, which both encodes the continuous variable in the persistent activity. So for the parametric working memory, we consider the homogeneous network, which means that during the delay period, different neuron varies more or less in the same manner. But for the special working memory, different neuron may have a different preferred cue location, which is shown is a different color. So this is a tuning curve of the firing rate during the delay period, and different color represents the different neuron. So for the given cue location, neuron cannot have the same firing rate. So for this type of working memory, it requires a heterogeneous network. So first, I will talk about the network mechanism for the homogeneous network, and we'll discuss about its extension for the heterogeneous network for the special working memory. So for the parametric working memory, the previous model have suggested this network interaction form a positive feedback loop, so that the activity can reverberate through this positive feedback loop after the offset of the transient input. So this maintenance can be conceptually understood in the simple firing rate model, where R denotes the average firing activity of the representative neuron in this homogeneous network. And the connectivity strength, the positive feedback is denoted as a W positive. Then in this simple firing rate model describing the dynamics, the first term corresponds to the intrinsic leakage process. So without any external input or synaptic currents, it leads to the decay of the activity to the baseline with the time constant tau. And second term is the total amount of the positive feedback. So when this positive feedback is perfectly tuned to cancel the intrinsic leakage process, that is W positive equal to 1 in this simple firing rate model, then the network can maintain the this persistent activity for the arbitrarily long duration. However, this positive feedback model faces a fine-tuning problem. So when this positive feedback is slightly mistuned from a perfect tuning, then it leads to the gross disruption in the persistent firing. So I will discuss about the network model, alternative network model, which is based on the different feedback mechanism. And we show that this new model is much more robust against the perturbation in the network parameters compared to the positive feedback network model. So in this new paradigm, now the network interaction contains an element which is proportional to the negative derivative of the activity. And the strength of this negative derivative feedback is denoted as a W derivative. And then this derivative feedback can provide a corrective signal. So if the activity drifts upward, it provides a negative input. And if the activity drifts downward, then the negative derivative becomes positive, so it provides a positive input and corrects back to the persistent firing. So as this derivative feedback gets stronger, the system gets more resistant against the changes. And we have shown that this derivative feedback can arise from the recurrent interaction when the positive feedback and the negative feedback in the recurrent interaction have the equal strength. Here I denote it as a J. But with the slower positive feedback, that is the synaptic time constant for the positive feedback should be slower than the synaptic time constant for the negative feedback, that is tau plus is larger than tau minus. Then in this case, in a step-like change in a firing rate, the positive feedback, due to the slower positive feedback, it will trace the changes slowly compared to the negative feedback, which is shown as a blue curve and a red curve, respectively. Then net recurrent input would be negative. On the other hand, due to the balance between a positive feedback and a negative feedback in strength, during the sustained firing, they cancel each other, so net recurrent input would be zero. So overall, to this step-like change, the net recurrent input would be like a derivative of activity. And we found that the strength of the derivative feedback is proportional to the balance portion of the positive and a negative feedback in a different difference in a time scale for the positive and a negative feedback. However, this is not biologically plausible because neuron can only emit all the positive signal or negative signal. So next, we consider the network, more biologically plausible network composed of the excitatory and inhibitory neuron. And synaptic connectivity is denoted as J, and a time constant for the synaptic filtering in each type of connection is denoted as tau. Then in this network, now the total the excitatory population or inhibitory population receive the excitatory input or inhibitory input, the positive and a negative signal, and a external input, which is a transient input. Then this would be transferred to the firing rate through the input current output firing rate transfer function. Then in such a dynamic system, the persistent activity, sustained persistent activity is corresponding to the attractor states. And to have a graded range of the persistent activity, there should be a continuum attractor in the dynamical system. So we found the negative directed feedback mechanism satisfies the existence and a stability condition for this continuum attractor states. And the core condition given here, these two core conditions satisfy this balance between a positive and a negative feedback in strength and a slower positive feedback in a simple firing rate model case. So to see this, we look at the feedback component onto the excitatory pathway. So onto the excitatory population, recurrent excitatory input to itself is corresponding to the positive feedback. And the input through the inhibitory population is corresponding to the negative feedback. So we found the expression for the strength of the positive and a negative feedback. And first condition ensures the balance. So first condition is ensuring this balance between a positive and a negative feedback in strength. Also, we found the time scale for the positive feedback is a sum of the time scale for the excitatory to excitatory pathway and the inhibitory to inhibitory pathway. And the time constant for the negative feedback is the input through the inhibitory population. So the slower positive feedback is guaranteed by the second condition. So we found that these two conditions are more or less present in memory cortical circuits. So first, balance between excitation and inhibition, which is a consequence of the balance between a positive and a negative feedback in strength, has been observed in a wide range of the brain area, including the prefrontal cortex. And second, the recent recording suggests the slower positive feedback due to the slower type of NMDA receptors, especially onto the excitatory to excitatory pathway. So not only the different tuning condition, this asymmetric contribution of the NMDA receptors in the excitatory, the positive feedback, and the negative feedback has not been considered in the previous model. So this negative directed feedback model suggests the different novel role of the NMDA receptors. So when you implemented this condition, the network can maintain the information during the delay period based on the derivative feedback. So in the plot, the different color represents the firing rate of the excitatory population for the different strengths of the input. So it can maintain this graded range of the persistent activity for the different strengths of the transient input. And more generally, it can temporally integrate the input, so showing the lamp-like activity in a step-like change, step-like input. Also, under the presence of the nonlinearity in the system, like a nonlinear input-output transfer function, that means for each for different I, there is a different gain for the firing rate. Then, under the same condition, this network can generate this graded range of persistent activity or temporally integrate the input under the same condition. And one of the advantages of the derivative feedback network is the large amount of the derivative feedback makes the system robust against the perturbation in the network parameters. So for instance, like a loss of the cells, the subpopulation of the neuron, or a change of the intrinsic gain, or a change of the all excitatory synaptic strengths, or a change of all inhibitory synaptic strengths, still maintain the balanced condition and persistent activities are minimally affected. So to see this, let's consider some example, the change of the intrinsic gain in the excitatory population. That means the effective strength coming to a neuron or the synaptic strength coming to a neuron is multiplied by the same factor M. Then under this perturbation in the intrinsic gain, it will cause the excess or deficit in the positive feedback in the previous model. So the persistent activity will be grossly disrupted, shown as a green and a magenta curves. On the other hand, in the negative derivative feedback, under this perturbation, now the excitatory input and the inhibitory input coming to a neuron are proportionally changing. So in the balanced condition, it is multiplied by the same factor in the numerator and the denominator, so we maintain this balanced condition. So this network can be robust against many types of perturbation. And next property is about the spiking statistics of this memory cell. So experimentally, it was shown that this memory cell shows quite irregular firing statistics during the persistent activity, which is shown as a high coefficient of variation of the interspike interval, which is a standard deviation of the interspike interval divided by mean. And it has been suggested that this irregular activity is a result of the balance between excitation and inhibition, because in the balance regime, the mean of the excitation positive signal and inhibitory the negative signal cancel each other, and the fluctuation can dominate. So in the negative derivative feedback network, based on the balance between a positive and a negative feedback in strength, which leads to the balance between excitation and inhibition, it should generate these irregular firing statistics. So to see this, we implemented this derivative feedback in a spiking neural network, where each neuron fired the spike like a real neuron. And this spike is exponentially filtered with a different time constant. And as in the previous simplified firing model, we considered the slower NMDA type of receptors, particularly in the excitatory to excitatory pathway. And under the same balance condition on the average synaptic strength on the each type of connectivity as in the firing model, which is found through the mean field analysis, we show that this network can maintain the graded range of the persistent activity. So this is the average firing rate of the excitatory population for the different strengths of the transient input. And during the persistent firing, it shows the quite irregular firing statistics, which is shown in the upper rest plot, where in the rest plot, each star represents the spike activity of each neuron. So the interspike is interspike interval is quite irregular. So in the first part of my talk, I discuss about the new paradigm for the special the working memory based on the corrective feedback control. And this corrective feedback control requires balance between excitation and inhibition and a slower positive feedback. And compared to the previous model, this network can temporally integrate the input and robust against the many type of perturbation in the network parameters. And also, it can generate these irregular firing statistics without fine-tuning the parameters. Sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But what you have access to at this level of model are, pseudo neurons.
Sure, yes.
So to what degree is this sort of parametric behavior really reflecting graded changes in the whole network? And to what degree might it be described more like changing the probability of in bistable elements of turning more of them on, right? Which is another idea that's very out there. Bistability with low histories. Do you have any leverage on that in this sort of?
So what I understood from your question is this kind of a graded range of the persistent activity, which is shown in the experiment, is kind of an average of the different trial. So what you are saying is the probability, this graded range of the persistent activity may arise in the different scenario rather than this different fire rate. Based on the different probability of the firing, it can generate. So our network model is more like the first description, like it maintains a different level of the persistent activity rather than a probabilistic description of the fire rate. And for the different, then we have to think about the different trial, right? So in the fire rate model, we cannot consider this a different trial because already this is a mean field description. And in the spiking network model, so what I understand up to now in this network model is more or less very similar to the simple fire rate model. So I have to further think how to implement the different possibility in the spiking network case. Okay. Thanks.
Yep. There's actually quite a bit of experimental support for graded persistent firing being an intrinsic property of cells in the absence of any synaptic input.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if you've considered that in your model to be, I think, a little stronger model, because this property actually is not true of all cells, but a subset of cells. And incorporating your feedback model with actual properties of cells can show persistent activity.
Sure. So, yeah, that is a good point. So I talk about mostly the network model in this case, but what you are saying is the intrinsic neuron, some of the, maybe not all neuron, but some fraction of the neuron may have a longer intrinsic time constant, right? So like, for instance, in my model, the time constant of the tau, then also that will, with this longer time constant, it can integrate the input. So, and to consider that, I may have to think about, so the very simple scenario, just increase the all-time scale for the neuron. Then I think together with this negative directive feedback model can be complementary to increase the time scale. But also, as you pointed out, maybe it's not all neurons, so I may have to think about the heterogeneous network. Maybe some fraction of the neuron have a longer time scale than how it can be incorporated in the network together with the neuron with a short time scale. So yeah, I have to. So that is one of my future direction. Think about the heterogeneous network, maybe the longer time constant or the different gain control in the different neurons. So then, based on this parametric working memory, I will discuss about the model for the spatial working memory. And for spatial working memory, the network interaction between the neurons with a different preferred cue location has been suggested. And previous models suggested that this network interaction requires a local excitation between the neurons with a similar preferred cue location to have the positive feedback to support the reverberation of the activity. Also, it requires a long-range inhibition for the neurons with a different preferred cue location to stabilize the spatially localized activity. However, it is unclear how this condition is realized in a cortex where the short-range inhibition is the most dominant form of the inhibition in a cortex. So I will show the extension of the directive feedback network model for the this spatial working memory, and we will show that this would not require long-range inhibition. And for this extension, we consider the spatially structured network with a columnar architecture, where in each column, neurons have a same or similar preferred cue location, which is represented by the direction of the arrow. then the fire rate and the synaptic variable coming out from neuron is now parameterized by its preferred cue location, theta. And the synaptic strength between the neurons is now dependent on the preferred cue location of the pre- and post-synaptic neurons, theta prime and theta. Then now the synaptic input is integrated over the input from a presynaptic neuron with a different preferred cue location. So this results in the integral differential equation. And we made the assumption that this synaptic stress between a neuron is only is the translation invariant that is dependent on the difference between a preferred cue location of the pre- and a postsynaptic neuron. Then under this condition, to find the condition for the derivative feedback network, we apply the free analysis to the special pattern to be maintained. Then for each free component, we could carry out the same analysis as shown in the homogeneous network case. So we found the same balance condition on the free component of each type of connectivity and the slower time constant for the time condition on the time scale for the slower positive feedback. Then when you implemented this condition, this network could maintain the information, the spatial information in the spatially localized activity. So if the Q appears transiently at the 0 degree, and if we parameterize the network activity with its preferred Q location, then during the persistent activity, the network maintains the unimodal activity shown as a green curve. And if the Q appears at the 90 degree during the stimulus presentation, now the unimodal activity is shifted, shown as an orange curve. So the location of this unimodal activity can encode the spatial information during the delay period. But not only this spatial information, it can maintain the information about the amplitude. So if the Q appears at the same place but at a different strength, then this network can maintain the unimodal activity at a different amplitude. So the derivative feedback network can maintain the spatial pattern activity including both the location and the amplitude. And also, it can integrate the spatially structured input. So if the spatially structured input continuously presented from time zero, then this spatial pattern of the activity gradually increases, the amplitude is gradually increasing over time. So each neuron shows the lamp-like activity with a different slope. Also, we investigate the relation between the spatial profile of the excitatory and inhibitory synaptic projection and the tuning width of the activity. So the upper panel shows the spatial profile of the synaptic projection of the excitatory cell, which is shown excitatory synaptic projection, and inhibitory projection, which is shown as a blue and a red curve. And the lower panel is the activity pattern during the delay period of the excitatory neuron, blue, and the inhibitory neuron, which is a red. Then either with a wider inhibitory projection or a narrower inhibitory projection, it can maintain the spatially localized pattern of the activity unlike the previous model. And also we found the inverse correlation between the width of the synaptic projection and the tuning width of the activity, that is, the narrower inhibitory projection leads to the wider inhibitory tuning curve. And we found that this inverse correlation is a consequence of the balance between excitation and inhibition coming to a neuron. So to achieve the balanced input, the narrower inhibitory projection is compensated by a broader inhibitory tuning curve. So in the second part, I showed the extension of the derivative feedback network to the spatial working memory. And here, I show that compared to the previous model, this can maintain the information about the location and the strength of the input. And also, it does not require long-range inhibition to stabilize the spatially localized activity. And balance between excitation and inhibition coming to a neuron is one of the key predictions of the distributive feedback network model. So any question so far?
mean, you don't call it parametric. You're saying the other one's parametric, but this is also parametric working memory as well, right? Because
special working memory.
Special working memory, but also has this parametric component, which is the amplitude.
Yes, that's true. So in my work, so the usual special working memory network only can maintain the special localized activity at the fixed amplitude, so what it can maintain the special information. But here, yes, the memory capacity is larger with this amplitude and the special location. So in some way, this can be also called as a parametric working memory. Yes. Yeah.
So can you give us some intuition for why? So I guess the heights are symbolized because of this negative derivative field,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Because that's like this line effector.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the heights. But
but then
you're saying that the architecture for actually getting the bumps,
yes,
is also different than typical ring models. Because you can have narrower inhibition.
Yeah, it can have a narrow inhibition. So
Does the balance condition have anything to do with the ability to form bumps with narrow range inhibition?
So the balance condition in the special Fourier components. For instance, the balance condition in the cosine first Fourier component, right? If it is satisfied, then it can maintain these cosine bumps, right, at the different location. Mm-hmm. So this negative derivative feedback is now the derivative feedback components into the different Fourier component. Yes. So, but still, I assume the same the translation invariant property to introduce a symmetry. Yeah. Okay. So then I will proceed to the next. So I will talk about the long-term memory. So this long-term memory is thought, unlike the short-term memory, this long-term memory is thought to be stored in a slow modification of the synaptic strengths. So I will discuss the different interaction this time. And this idea, the slow modification of the synaptic strengths can be a substrate for the learning and memory, has been postulated by Hebb. So in his idea, so nearby neuron A and B, if the nearby neuron happen to fire together, then strengths between strengths of the synaptic connection gets stronger. So these changes of the synaptic strengths may reflect the correlated firing in the past. So this idea, ability to change its synaptic strengths is called as a synaptic plasticity. And synaptic plasticity has been tested in the vitro study by measuring the activity. So in the vitro, one patch the pairs of a neuron and evoke the activity in a pre- and a post-synaptic neuron with a different timing or a different frequency and measure the changes of the response of the post-synaptic cell after the synaptic plasticity induction protocol. So in this particular case, we can see that increase in the synaptic strengths. On the other hand, these kinds of direct tests is hard to be measured, is difficult in living animal. So instead, the gradual changes of the activity under the deprivation of the input or perceptual training for the particular stimulus has been suggested as the evidence for the synaptic plasticity, because changes in the synaptic strengths can lead to the changes of the input to a neuron and will in turn lead to the changes of the activity. However, In this case, it is hard to find what plasticity underlies such a changes, because neurons usually in the brain is connected with many other neurons. So it is hard to isolate the changes of each type of connectivity in the network of the neurons. So here, we propose the novel method to infer these changes of the synaptic strengths from the changes of the activity under some biologically plausible assumptions. So to illustrate this, we consider the activity changes observed during the visual learning or long-term memory. So experimentally, it was shown that neurons in the inferior temporal cortex differentiate the learned and unlearned images. So here is a task where the monkey passively viewed the screen where the novel and familiar images were presented. And novel images is the images that had not been viewed before the session, recording session. And the familiar images is seen intensively before the session. Then for each stimulus, we can obtain the fire rate by averaging the activity during the stimulus presentation. And here is the distribution of the activity fire rates for the novel, for the different novel and the different familiar stimuli, shown as the red and the blue curve. And the left is the excitatory neuron, and the right is the inhibitory neuron. So in both cases, we can see the shift of the distribution to the left, corresponding to the decrease of the average firing activity in both cases. And also, we can see the broadening of the distribution, which corresponds to the increase of the selectivity to the stimulus. And also, for the excitatory neuron, there was an increase in the maximum response. And we found out we want to find the plasticity rule, which is consistent with the changes of such a changes of the activity. And to see this, we consider the recurrent network model with the plastic synapses. And in this model, the activity of the neuron is described by the fire rate, which is denoted by Ri. And the synaptic strength is denoted as a Wij. And the neuron receives the external input and the recurrent input. And this input is transferred to the fire rate through the input-output transfer function. So it satisfies this self-consistency equation. And to account for the changes of the activity with the learning, we consider the simple scenario that the changes of the synaptic strengths occur once is a one-shot learning, which is dependent on the fire rate before and fire rate of the pre- and post-synaptic neuron before learning. And these changes in the synaptic strength, which is denoted as delta W, will lead to the changes of the input to the neuron and will lead to the changes in the fire rate, which is denoted as a delta I and a delta R. Then we could find the relation between these changes of the input in terms of this delta W and delta R. So we already have the delta R, changes of the fire rate. And then to infer this delta W, we need to compute the changes of the input with the learning. And these changes of the input can be obtained from the changes of the fire rate if we know the input-output transfer function. So here, as a first step, we infer this input current and the output fire rate transfer function from the distribution of the fire rate for the novel stimuli. And to do this, we made two assumptions. One is the input to a neuron for the novel stimuli is following the Gaussian statistics based on the observation that neurons receive a large number of the input, and these inputs are uncorrelated for the novel stimuli. And second, we assume that the input-output transfer function is monotonically increasing, consistent with electrophysiological data. Then, from the distribution of the fire rates for the novel stimuli, we could obtain the input-output transfer function by one-to-one match between the input current and the output fire rate at the same length. And then using this empirically obtained this input-output transfer function, we now compute the changes of the input. So this change, we already have the different distribution for the of the activity for the novel and the familiar stimuli, which is shown as red and blue curves. And then by converting it through the transfer function, we could obtain the distribution of the input currents for the novel and the familiar stimuli, which is shown in the right panel. But note that this distribution of the input currents or the fire rates were obtained for the different set of the stimuli, one for the novel stimuli and the other for the familiar stimuli. So to infer the changes of the input, we made the assumption that the length of the stimulus among the all stimuli is preserved with the learning. That is, some stimulus that elicits the median response when it is novel, it elicits the median response when it becomes familiarized. Then, by comparing the input at the same length before and after learning, we could obtain the changes of the input delta I, and we could plot these changes of input as a function of the fire rate before learning. And then from these changes of the input, we obtain changes of the synaptic strength delta W. But for this, we made a final assumption that this delta W is the separable function of the pre- and post-synaptic firing rates. Then, now the dependence of the on the post-synaptic firing rate, this learning rule on the post-synaptic firing rate is similar to delta I with a constant subtraction and normalization with the presynaptic contribution. So it is shown here in the lower panel with the right axis. So using this method, we investigate the effect of the learning in the different neurons. And to compare the neurons with a different range of the firing rate, we normalize the firing rates with its standard mean and the standard deviation and plot these input changes as a function of these normalized firing rates. Then in this panel, each curve is corresponding to the individual neuron. So we can see the diverse pattern of the these input changes. So some neuron shows the positive changes, or it shows the negative changes only, or some neuron shows the both negative and the positive changes. But note that this is input changes, so different input changes may arise from the different offset rather than the difference in the plasticity. So we average this input curve for the different neuron, then we could obtain this depression, the negative changes for the low firing rates and the potentiation for the high firing rates. And in the inhibitory neuron, unlike the this excitatory neuron, the changes of the input is all negative. It's at the one neuron. And these changes of input may arise from the changes of the input from the excitatory neuron due to the change of the firing rate of the excitatory neuron rather than plasticity onto the onto the inhibitory population. And then also we investigate the relationship between the threshold separating this depression and potentiation with the activity of the neuron. So we define the threshold when the input changes become positive. And this zeta is shown to be correlated with the mean activity and the standard deviation of this activity of the neuron. So this suggests the regulation of the learning rule depending on the activity of the neuron, which is reminiscent of the BCM rule suggested in an early visual system to stabilize this heavier learning rule. Also, we found that most of the learning rule, this threshold is above the 1.5 standard deviation above the mean, which suggests the depression-dominant learning rule. So this depression-dominant learning rule leads to the decrease in the average firing rate, and which is important for the maybe sparse coding and stable learning dynamics. So in the second part, I showed the novel method to derive the synaptic plasticity rule from the changes of the activity under the biologically plausible assumption. And this work may provide a bridge between an in vitro study and in vivo data. So the application of this method to the experimental data in the inferior temporal cortex shows the depression for the low firing rates and the potentiation for the high firing rates for the excitatory neuron, and depression dominant plasticity rule. and also shows the correlation between the threshold and the activity of the neuron. And although I didn't show the simulation here, we implemented this learning rule in the network of neurons, network of the excitatory and inhibitory population, and showed that based on this depression dominant feature, it can maintain the stable learning dynamics under the presence of the multiple uncorrelated pattern. And also it provides a good match to the data. So if you have any question, feel free to ask. Then I will proceed to the future direction. Yes, shortly. Yeah, maybe you are already overwhelmed. So I'd like to discuss about the future direction of my research. So today I have shown my work examining the cortical mechanism for the both type of memory, short-term memory and long-term memory, based on the network interaction between excitatory and inhibitory neurons, or interaction between a synaptic plasticity rule and a network of the activity. And based on this research, I would like to further analyze and develop the biologically plausible network model for the learning and memory. So this will include the further analysis of the local cortical circuit I discussed today. So in a long-term memory, we consider the firing rate dependent plasticity, and particularly in the excitatory to excitatory pathway. But experimentally and theoretically, different type of plasticity rule has been suggested, such as the spike timing plasticity rule or inhibitory plasticity onto the excitatory population. So I'd like to further investigate the different type of synaptic plasticity for the long-term memory. And this research may reveal that the combination of the different type of plasticity may have more profound effects on the dynamical property or spike statistics with the learning. Also, I'd like to investigate the relationship between the memory performance and the local circuit property. So for instance, for the short-term memory, the memory performance or the memory capacity, how many items can be stored in the short-term memory, can be related to the ability to maintain the multiple bumps of during the persistent activity. So each bump can correspond to the each item in this case. Then this ability, for instance, in a negative derivative feedback, is related to the special structure of the excitatory and inhibitory projection. And maybe this can be limited by the noise in the input or systematic noise in the synaptic connection. And also, I'd like to investigate the interaction of this memory cortical circuit with the other brain area. So for instance, the memory-correlated activity has been shown to be modulated by a reward or attentional signal. And this attentional signal or reward signal may provide the additive bias, or it can give a multiplicative gain control. And if this is an additive signal, then the ability of this derivative feedback network can maintain the special localized activity of the different amplitude can be useful for the modulating the activity. But also, if it is a multiplicative gain control, which affects the strength of the synapses, then it is unclear how it is implemented in the memory cortical circuit, so further investigation is needed, and maybe it requires more biophysically detailed model. And in the long term, I'd like to investigate how the information arrive or transform or combine with a different signal by examining the activity of the memory circuit in the different period of the task, which is the sample period and the delay period, and also activity recorded in a different brain area. So before I finish, I'd like to acknowledge my collaborator. So first part of the talk about the short-term memory was done under the collaboration with Mark Goldman at UC Davis. And second part for the long-term memory was done under the collaboration with Nicola Brunel and Yali Amid in the University of Chicago. And David Friedman, Jill McGee, David Scheinberg, and Luke Ulustin provided us the experimental data. So thank you for your attention. Yes?
So this might be sort of a variant of the question that Dan asked earlier, but and it's kind of general, so I apologize for that. But I'm always a little wary of models. I mean, the brains, our heads are already too big. So I'm always wary of models that use five neurons where the same computation could have been one neuron. So,
mm-hmm.
So in each of your models, there were reverberations and such. And so talk me down from the ledge that it's okay to use three neurons for persistent activity when maybe one neuron could do it.
So the first part, it can be related to the first part of my talk about the short-term memory. So actually for the negative directive feedback network, it may not, the network interaction is so important because the strength of the negative directive feedback is proportional to the balanced portion of the positive and the negative feedback. And this strength can be larger when the neuron receives a large amount of the input. So actually, so in a simple fine rate model, I could increase this the strength of the J arbitrarily, but this is implementing the network size already in the consideration. So what is proposed is kind of a network interaction and the large number of the population to generate this negative directive feedback. But also at the same time, I think you bring up the important question, because in this negative directive feedback model, more or less the average activity is tuned to work together to perform one function. So in the future direction, I would like to think about how the different signal can be encoded together. And then, the real neuron not only shows these kinds of persistent activity, but also it can show the lamp-like activity or like a decrease in the activity. So in the recorded area, like 10% of the neuron shows this persistent activity with a graded manner. So, and also it has been suggested that those kinds of different type of activity can encode a different signal, like a time over the delay period. So thinking about how the different signal can be combined while maintaining this fidelity of the persistent activity is in question also.
Yep. Yeah, another sort of bit of data to throw out these models. So when you're working memory models.
Mm-hmm.
How the architecture plays with the sort of growing body of observations that in these parietal frontal areas that typically show working memory like persistent activity. There seems to be a full field normalization thing going on, such that if you're driving a neuron and it has persistent activity for stuff in some part of the visual field, there's a probably divisive effect of presenting stuff anywhere else in the visual field, and this can be for simple visual stimuli, or these can be a much more Paul Glimcher-esque value-like judgments. This seems to be probably a pretty canonical thing.
Mm-hmm.
Does your architecture, although it has a very local sort of component to it, can that still buy you that, or would it be at least amenable to incorporating something that's really got just a sink in it that's full field?
Can you rephrase your question? The full field is not a familiar concept for me, so.
Okay, so basically the activity of some neuron that might have persistent activity, which mm-hmm. is at a flash target here,
mm-hmm.
Will be lower if you also just stick something else up in the visual field.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And if you put two things up in the visual field, it'll be lower still. And that doesn't just hold for real simple visual memory, it holds true for these same areas, their persistent activity, if the animal's doing a valuation judgment. So Paul Glimcher's been showing a lot of this stuff, that essentially the activity of any neuron that's got this sort of persistent activity in cortex
mm-hmm.
is a function not just of sort of the thing it's remembering,
mm-hmm.
but it's the ratio of that with all the other stuff, and it doesn't have to be particularly relevant or particularly tuned. These neurons seem to be really just divisively normalized by all the other stuff in the scene. How does your model play with that sort of observation? Because it seems pretty general.
You mean the experimental data is more general?
It seems that in many domains, that notion in attention, in visual stimulation, and now even in these sort of value-based judgments, that full-field divisive normalization seems to be at play here, which is different than, say, in V1, where the divisive normalization is pretty local.
So maybe we can discuss further after the this one. But what I can think is this. I talk about the local circuit mechanism, but this can be transferred to this idea can be transferred to the other brain area as well. Also, as you say, not only this prefrontal cortex, but parietal cortex has shown these kinds of persistent activity. And I may not answer your question correctly, but this kinds of activity for the different brain area, I do like to think about the it's a different role. Maybe the parietal cortex may have a similar architecture, or it can have this to generate the persistent activity. It may need this kinds of a connection for the different brain area, but so maybe the different feature in the parietal cortex and the prefrontal cortex, maybe how the activity can be combined with a reward signal or attentional signal. So, but I think this is not the correct answer for your question.
We will have time to talk about it.
Sure.
It's sort of within an area. Your model work okay. Just stick irrelevant stuff in other locations, right, where other bumps would be.
So I just want to ask you one thing, which is probably naive. So according to your very simplified diagram of this excitatory neuron, neurons, the output of excitatory neurons come back to the same neurons. Does it really mean that output of one excitatory neuron, one inhibitor neuron should come back to exactly the same neuron, or this is just a indication of some feed-forward inhibition or feed-forward excitation from other group of them?
So the simple fine rate model may have some kinds of, so I think, in a simple fine rate model, I had the recurrent excitation coming to the same population. But in a spiking neural network, what I considered was sparse connectivity between a neuron. So the probability it comes back to this, neuron is very low, and also even if I exclude this the recurrent excitation onto itself, it still can generate this negative duality feedback. So it's kind of a network interaction between a multiple pathway rather than thanks.
I think there are further questions, so let's thank Sabine again.